Welcome into the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet at Sportsnet 590. The Fan for the next hour. We'll get you set for three Stanley Cup playoff games tonight. It's Montreal and Washington game five. Washington with a 3-1 series lead. That kicks things off at 7 o'clock, followed by Florida-Tampa. Florida with a 3-1 series lead, looking to close things out in game five. That's on Sportsnet 360 around 7:30. And then the nightcap, St. Louis and Winnipeg tied up at 2 apiece going into game four.
Yeah, it's clinching time. Like, aside from St. Louis and Winnipeg, it's like exclusively elimination games from here on out, which is very exciting. I'll be sad to see round one go, but
it's been fun.
It has been fun.
Fun and chaotic and emotional and full of passion. We'll go more in the Winnipeg Jets perspective around 6:30. Sarah Orleski will join us and go through the Hellebuck discussion, how the whiteout will look tonight. All home games have been won, but all teams in the home ice advantage have been winning that series, so Winnipeg gets a chance tonight. But let's kick things off with Frank Saravalli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. Frank, happy round one, wrapping up, clinching time, as Justin says. It's been a fun couple weeks here.
Yeah, I'm with Justin. I hate to see round one go. I think it's the best time in the sport all year.
Okay, well, let's let it linger a little bit longer for us. We got three games tonight on our network. Montreal and Washington will start there. That one's first up on the network, and Washington's got the 3-1 series lead. But I was trying to find a little hope for Montreal, and I found it in the fact that six players, Gallagher, Suzuki, Caulfield, Anderson, Evans, and Armia, were all a part of the team that rallied from down 3-1 to beat the Leafs in 2021, which we remember well. I don't know if they're fit for something that heroic again, but I've been impressed with the fight that Montreal has shown in small samples when they get themselves back in games, and I'm wondering if you believe in a little bit of that coming back into this series.
I'm a huge believer in the fact that the Montreal Canadiens have shown almost no fear throughout this series. They are by far the smaller team. They are by far the more inexperienced team. And they've got so many players that are making their playoff debut, getting their first taste of this experience in a rabid Montreal market where you hear it in both languages day in and day out for a 2-week period of time. And they haven't flinched once. They had an opportunity to draw even in the series and weren't able to pull it off. And I thought that showed the true mettle of the Caps, who still have some players left from that Stanley Cup championship core in 2018. But I don't expect them to back down, and I don't expect them to go easily.
Yeah, the Capitals have been interesting for this because I think Montreal takes a lot of the headline in terms of, okay, they're the team that is showing a little bit more despite being down. The Capitals were supposed to take care of Montreal, probably in the manner that they seem to be doing. And I guess we can kind of just flip to the next page with that. But I don't know. I haven't been all that impressed here watching the Capitals. I feel like some of their vulnerabilities in future series, more legitimate series, may be showing. And I also think, like, okay, this team has got Tom Wilson definitely leading the line here. And Tom Wilson has arguably been their most impactful player. But if Tom Wilson is your most impactful player, is that worrisome down the line? Have you taken anything from the first few games of the Capitals' run?
Yeah, I would say that heading into this series, Justin, I felt like when you looked at the standings with the Washington Capitals, that they're kind of like the warning that's on your passenger side mirror. Objects in mirror are closer than they appear. That the gap that exists in reality between the Caps and other teams in the Eastern Conference really isn't that big. And beyond that, I think they were able to feast on some career years from players with an offense that never really ran into a wall, that continued to produce and score with ease, that I think a lot of things came really easy to them this year. They weren't really ever in a situation that they were forced to sweat. The Canadians have asked some of those questions, and they've responded pretty well. But not to preempt the Leafs conversation, but this was supposed to be the easy part. Now what happens when you get a real test in round two?
I don't think we're going to talk about the Leafs.
We'll get there. Okay. We'll get there, Frank.
Not allowed or what?
Yeah, no, it's not. Since you mentioned Tom Wilson, there's just been a lot of conversation. Obviously, he had quite the hit in the last game, and he brings a huge level of physicality. And he was snubbed from the Four Nations roster along with every other Washington Capitals player. And I just wonder if this big game performance and this big moment performance that he's shown gives you any thought about his participation at the Olympics, or is that game just so different in the IIHF rules that maybe he's not like the right fit with just his presence?
No, I think his presence would be really welcomed. And I think after getting pushed around by Team USA in game one to open the Four Nations, that it was at that exact moment in time when they were getting bull rushed by both Tkachuk brothers that they thought, hey, maybe we probably should have at least added one of those pieces that can withstand it.
Patrick Laine has been an interesting story, a subplot in this series. The Demidov thing is interesting because it seems like there's not like a complete redundancy, but it's like they're supposed to play the same role in this team, and you can't have too much scoring, I suppose. But the Laine thing, you know, there's might be an injury. There might be more than that. It just, I feel like there's more to the story, more to find out. But how do you assess the future between Montreal and Patrick Laine, knowing what we know at this moment in time?
I'm going to take it a step further, Justin, and say that in totality, Patrick Laine's career is at a crossroads. He has had the injuries. He's struggled with the mental health part of it, and certainly have full respect and admiration for what he's battled through to get back from both a physical and mental perspective this season. But this is a player that has shown little signs of compete, little signs of care for the puck, and has become kind of a one-trick pony. He's a power play piece that can pummel the puck, that can, you know, really help you out on your power play, fourth in the league in power play goals this season, which is pretty impressive considering the amount of time that he missed. And I do see a redundancy, not just from the Demidov perspective, but also on the other flank on the Montreal Canadiens homegrown power play in the guy that you just wind him up and let him go in Cole Caulfield, and he can hit that one-timer. So I think he's got to find another element to his game. I think we're all waiting to see that Patrick Laine that was so engaged and really seemed like he cared. And I just don't know at this point in time, with his age, with how many games that he's played, with how much money he's made at this point in time, that is he going to find that gear again? I think that's a big question mark, not just for the Montreal Canadiens, but one that every other team would like to find an answer to.
We got Montreal and Washington. Washington with the 3-1 series lead, a 7 p.m. start on Sportsnet. Okay, let's move to the Battle of Florida. And we've had two suspensions, many questionable hits, injuries, chaos, back and forth with the coaches as well. This series seems to have the most hate, but I wonder if it'll be a little bit more dialed in tonight with word that this is kind of getting out of hand at times.
It's hard for me to say that these teams are going to find a way to reel it in. I mean, there's so much brute force and physicality in these lineups, and frankly, at that, so much high-end skill. Like I said before this series started, and I think back to the last time these two teams met in the playoffs, they're both trying to run each other into the third row of the seats. And that's an unbelievable theater to attach to a Stanley Cup playoff series. Then you figure out that these two teams have also some of the most highly intelligent hockey IQ players in the league. And it really is a treat. I think what we could be in for is criminal in that. What if it is only five games? Mm-hmm. What if we don't get more of this? And I also think potentially on the flip side of this, there's a lot of questions to ask about the Tampa Bay Lightning and what's their plan moving forward. Another team that gave up, you know, significant future assets to trade for bottom six players that hasn't worked out. Andrei Vasilevsky appears to be showing his age and showing some wear on the tires. And now what? You've got a bottom six that needs help. You've got a bottom half of your defense core that gets really thin in a hurry. And you start to ask the question of, is the Tampa Bay Lightning, after yet another potential first-round series exit, is the window closing to win?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to track, because despite how aggressive they were, and you mentioned it, trading, you know, legitimate assets for middle six or below, it still looks like a bit of a thin group, and they have this great year. Their goal differential was fantastic. They were a great team, and they still remain, you know, the standard in a lot of ways in the league. But when you see them matched up against Florida and you see what one injury could do to the lineup, it does look different than it looks with Florida, who can fill those holes, at least right now, a little bit more effectively. I guess we're still in the first impressions portion of the playoffs, four or five games apiece for these teams. Has Florida made the strongest first impression for you?
I think so, just because we weren't really sure what to make of this new-look Florida lineup. How would all these pieces mesh together? We hadn't seen Matthew Tkachuk since the Four Nations faceoff. We don't know what he would look like, how close he would be to 100%. Opens the playoffs with two goals in his first game and looks not out of place at all. Seth Jones has contributed pretty admirably to that team. And I would say that for a team, you mentioned the Tampa Bay Lightning, that was looked at as the standard. To me, the Florida Panthers have grabbed that mantle, and that's not recency bias. That's not the last two trips to the Stanley Cup final and a banner that's hung in their arena. It's also the way that they've gone about building their team. They've taken a lot of the same aggressive tenets that the Tampa Bay Lightning had and have implemented them in a way that I think has been more intelligent, smarter, better bets. And they've got a really strong nucleus moving forward that maybe we'll see what happens with Sam Bennett in the open market, but kind of for once in a while, the Panthers also have some salary cap space this summer.
I definitely want to see this series extended a little longer, just selfishly, because it's been really fun to watch. And I saw that the Lightning are 5-0 when facing elimination for the first time in a series, so they don't back down in that first opportunity against being eliminated. And I think
it's a lot different than 1-13, isn't it?
I know that was going to come up.
We're getting there, Frank.
Paused. I did notice, though, that the top offensive weapons for the Lightning might be the reason that they are behind in this series. Kucherov has no goals. I know he's been able to get some assists. But Gensel and Point are the only two forwards or anyone on their team that have more than one goal. They have two each. So is that it tonight? Like, put the faith in the big guys to show up in an elimination game and get it done?
I think that's squarely on the shoulders of Nikita Kucherov and company to figure it out. I mean, they're eminently capable. He's proven before that he can do it. And where's it been? And how much of the question marks that might have surrounded a couple quiet playoff runs now, how much of those, if any, can be attributed to age? Or is this just matchup? Is it fluke? What is it? Because I think at some point you tend to run out of excuses as well.
Okay, let's move to St. Louis and Winnipeg. We'll break this down a little bit more after the break with Sarah Orleski, but do want to pick your brain on the Connor Hellebuyck discourse. I don't know if it is disproportionate, but it feels like Connor Hellebuyck, and he deserves some of it because he's had a pretty spotty playoff record, but it feels like the lion's share, or even more than the lion's share, is falling on his shoulders. When I've looked at this Winnipeg team and thought, you know, they're not really playing very well 1-18. Where do you stand on, you know, where the blame is lying, where the discussion is, and whether or not some of these Jets and this Jets team and maybe Scott Arneil and the coaching staff is getting off a little scot-free, given that all the attention seems to be on one player, the goaltender?
I understand your premise, but I disagree with it. I think I'm going to say that 85 or 80% of this at least falls on Connor Hellebuck's shoulders. And I'll say that a lot of it is the opposite of what I feel about the Edmonton Oilers. Now, some of it is the same, but I'll tell you why it's different. So I've thought about the Oilers and the struggles that they had to start their series against the Los Angeles Kings. And I've said, you know, Stuart Skinner, you're allowed to make a save every now and again. Like, that is okay. Like, you can contribute. And the difference between Skinner and Hellebuyck is that Skinner is not the focal point of their team. That's not the strength of their team. That's not how they've built their roster. That's not where they've allocated their dollars. This is Hellebuyck coming off of likely a third Vezina Trophy win in his career, inarguably one of the best goalies of his generation. And he's got an .817 save percentage through four games. Now, let me use the same line again. Connor Hellebuyck, you are allowed to make some saves. There can be chaos around you. You can have poor defense in front of you and defending as a team. You can have weird things like deflections and pucks going in off of your teammates, which have happened in this series. And I talked to a Winnipeg Jets defenseman privately this week who said, hey, we're not close and we need to play much better than we have in front of Hellebuyck. That said, where's he at? He's allowed to bail you out every now and again. And we've seen almost none of that from Hellebuyck. And we've seen now multiple years to point to say that part of this is probably just a mental block in his own head.
Last one from this series, a 2-2 tie. Each home team has won the games. Obviously, the whiteout will be part of it. But Gabe Vilardi coming back in the lineup most likely tonight. Like, how much of a boost is that for this team, a guy that can help offensively and gets to be back at home for their
Doubt getting Gabe Vilardi back, Ailish, will help, mm-hmm. but not as much as getting some saves from Connor Hellebuck.
Got it.
I'm with you. 10 goals in 4 games, though, from the Jets, who, you know, if the goaltender is dealing with things, maybe scoring some goals will help him make a couple saves. But I digress. Okay, let's get to the Leafs, because I think you wanted to talk a little Leafs.
Why? What's happening?
The mood in Leafs Nation last night was maybe not rock bottom,
no,
but
it was
like
grim.
Bottom 5, bottom 3. Yeah. Do you have
of
an
the season or of all time?
Of all time. The 1-13 and all that. Do you have an explanation for why it looked the way it did, especially from the top guys for the Maple Leafs last night?
I mean, I think if I had an explanation, I don't know, I'd be a lot wealthier. Mm-hmm. I think everyone's trying to figure out a solution here, because why is it that these guys can produce and do it to start this series, and then you get to the clutch moments, you get to the time when you're really supposed to make your money, and you clench up? And if you look at their career statistics from games 5 through 7, and you see Mitch Marner, and you see 15 games and 0 goals and 6 assists, and you see Austin Matthews and every other guy that's part of the core four, look, I know that Craig Berube's job is to deflect some of this. And he said, you know, it's always core. And, you know, how come, you know, we're a team. But that said, let me take you back to what I was just saying about the Oilers and the Jets. That's not how this team is structured. From a cap perspective, from a roster construction perspective, they are built on that core contributing. And to think that you can get to this point in the series when it's time to close it out and just, I don't know, squeeze your stick too tight, get nervous, the moment gets to you, whatever it might be. At some point when you see the same movie over and over and over again and you expect a different result, like, this is why I picked the Sens in this series mm-hmm. before the series started. Until I see something different, and to be totally candid and clear, I said earlier in this series that this team looked confident and they looked like a team that was composed in a way that we haven't seen them through the Marner and Matthews era. But that changed, and it's changed in a big way. And when you get shut out and you get the game taken to you by a team that not only has nothing to lose but has next to no experience in the playoffs, that's on you.
Yeah, you might look like a genius come Saturday night, Frank. Depending on how this all wraps up. We'll have a full day tomorrow to preview game 6, Leafs Sens. But I do want to ask you one. I have a couple questions written down about the head coaching carousel. And I don't know if they're maybe just like rapid fire for you.
Sure.
But there's a lot of moving pieces right now. And I'm curious, like, what you think is the most attractive job opportunity and who would be the, like, I'm almost asking you to play matchmaker without playing matchmaker, but who would be the most intriguing candidate to land there? Is it Sullivan and the Rangers? Is that simple?
I think that one is really simple, because you look at the team that won the President's Trophy 2 years ago now and got to 2 Eastern Conference Finals in 3 seasons, and you see one of the best goalies in the world plus a Norris Trophy winner plus mm-hmm. some real firepower up front, and you say that's a team that's a prime bounce back candidate in the Rangers. And so maybe not rapid fire, but I think they've had a long history and interest in Mike Sullivan. He previously worked there. It just seems to connect so many boxes that, or connect so many dots, I should say, that it's almost one of those things where you'd be surprised if it doesn't happen.
A lot of conversation about Cooper and what happens if this series ends quickly. Obviously it's not over and he's still employed, but I've seen a lot of people connecting dots about him going elsewhere. I'm just curious if that's something that's come across your timeline.
It has. And I think one of the parts about this job that I find so fascinating is how long it takes information to get around. Like, I had an NHL GM call me and mention the John Cooper connection with Utah Hockey Club back in January. And I was like, oh, okay, like, file that one away. And that's not me sitting here saying like, oh, like I know things that other people don't. It's just saying like, okay, great. But like, as far as I know, he's still the head coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning and is the longest tenured coach in the league. So you're going to take a significant change in order for that to happen. So that's out there this week. It's out there today, you know, before they're even eliminated. I do think that there is a certain sort of Mike Sullivan-esque connection to it in the sense that he was the second longest tenured guy, had won back-to-back cups just like Cooper. And at some point, maybe you get to this moment where it is a mutual decision. Like, hey, we've done the best that we can do here. It's just time. It's a fact of life. And so Cooper's closing in on 1,000 games all with one team in the regular season. I don't know what the future holds, but I could see both of them, Julian Breezeball running the Lightning and John Cooper, after achieving all that success and losing again in the first round, to say, hey, let's do something different.
That's interesting. I kind of going down that road, and it could just be the answer is the Tampa Bay Lightning, but teams that are close to on the brink or potentially, you know, a couple games away at the very least of suffering what would be like a really, really disappointing first round exit. So I'm not going to include, you know, the Montreal Canadiens in this discussion, but a team that could crash out here that would be facing the most drastic consequences. Is it just Tampa? Is it just Toronto? Of the teams that may end up not getting through round one, which one would cause more of a chain reaction internally?
Well, I think it starts and ends with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, Mitch Marner is a free agent, and we've heard forever that they cannot possibly continue to do this again, yet every year they continue to do this again. So what will be the big change? I would say next, and perhaps more interesting than the Tampa Bay Lightning, will be the Los Angeles Kings. Look, Jim Hiller and the decision-making process from the challenge to continuing to run 4D and have your team get caved in the third period to Adrian Kempe playing defense, of all things, in Game 5. Certainly some interesting choices. Don't know if he's going to live those down, but that might not be it for the Kings because Rob Blake is into the last year of his deal as general manager. He's been offered an extension. He hasn't signed one. If he gets through this playoff run and they don't win, that's 8 years of Blake as general manager and no playoff series win. So what will happen with the LA Kings? Will we see wholesale changes? I think they maybe kind of saved themselves a little bit last night with an offside review, but people are already starting to ask about the Vegas Golden Knights. I think that's way too soon. And then you've got the Lightning. And by the way, just to like connect another dot with Cooper, and this is just me from a personal perspective, but if it's not to do something else as like say a general manager or something, what about Cooper going back to Long Island where he played college lacrosse for Hofstra?
Okay, that is not something that I knew. Look at Frank and connecting dots that we didn't know existed. Cool, we heard it here first.
It's a good cliffhanger.
It's a good cliffhanger. Well, Frank, we kept you for much too long tonight. We appreciate your time, and we will definitely chat with you next week and enjoy the rest of the first round.
Sounds good. Say hi to Sarah for me.
We will. That's Frank Saravelli of Daily Faceoff, president of hockey content there. We only have about a minute and a half before we have to take a break. Do you want to save bets and everything?
Yeah, let's save it all because we'll have some time at the end of the show. I mean, I didn't expect to be talking about John Cooper and potential
and
consequences.
His lacrosse career.
For the Lightning. The lacrosse career. Maybe he just loves mountains. Maybe he loves the mammoth. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We can get to that later perhaps as well. Utah might be leaning towards a team name. But
I also saw that he's from BC. And so there's a head coach job available
in
Vancouver,
I guess he would be able to call his shot if he
gets
there.
Seems like it.
But it feels like, you know, everyone reaches the expiration date in the NHL. And despite John Cooper having this immense amount of success, like he will get there too. I just wasn't thinking about it because I was thinking about, oh, well, Tampa Bay Lightning could win the Stanley Cup this year. And now it looks way less likely.
Okay, we'll take a quick break. Yeah, it does look less likely, but we'll see what happens. We got a couple games on the network tonight. Montreal, Washington will be a 7 p.m. start on Sportsnet. That's Game 5. And we've got Florida, Tampa, that same one, a 7:30 Game 5 on Sportsnet 360. If you're looking for the Blue Jays and the Red Sox, Sportsnet 1 will have it in Sportsnet 590, the Fan, with a 7 o'clock first pitch. We will tee all that up on the other side of the break and talk about where the PWHL has also announced their expansion. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A couple NHL games in action tonight in about 30 minutes. Kicks off with Montreal and Washington. Montreal up against the ropes, looking to push back. Looks like Alexi Protas will be back in the lineup for the Capitals, which will bring a big boost.
Another big body for Montreal to deal with.
And Dobesh. Got it. I didn't nail it. In net for Montreal because Montembeau is still injured.
Yeah. I mean,
I've heard it pronounced many different ways. I just wanted to double check.
Dobesh. You put like a little extra on it.
That's all right.
Okay, though.
He deserves it tonight.
He does. It's a big spot for Dobesh. When those two things happened, those two goaltending injuries in that game, mm-hmm. like there was no way Logan Thompson would be the guy coming back, it seemed like.
I thought he tore every muscle in his legs.
Yeah, and yet he's able to come back and obviously lead Washington to a big win in game four. So not that the series turned on that, because Dobesh seems to be just as, not accomplished, but just as capable, I suppose, as Montembeau. It's been good. But yeah, if they had lost Logan Thompson, that being the Capitals, that would have been a big, big deal.
Okay, we teased it just before the break, but big news for hockey fans. PWHL has also announced expansion just a week after Vancouver. Another team in the West Coast will have PWHL Seattle. So welcome to the eighth team in the PWHL. I'm looking forward to seeing this little West Coast rivalry kicking off. They'll also start next season along with Vancouver, and they're going to play out of Climate Pledge Arena, which is an amazing facility, and get to be in the NHL facility. And everyone says, I've never been, but speaks very highly about that arena. So a great venue for the women's team to play out of. And I would say Seattle is probably one of the best women's sports cities. They got a WNBA team, an NWSL team. They'll have a PWHL team. They really came out in full force to support when they had the takeover tour game this year. There was like just over 12,500 fans. But then earlier in the rivalry series, I know they played at that same Climate Pledge Arena and had like 14,500 fans. And I've talked to the girls like on Team Canada who played in that rivalry series game and also played either on the takeover tour. And they said they loved Seattle, that the fan base was amazing, that they really showed up. So they rewarded with a second PWHL expansion team.
Yeah, I don't want to say like no-brainer, because there's a lot of capable cities to host a PWHL team. But if you can be in that arena and you get the territorial rivalry that is Vancouver,
that's perfect.
It does feel like a slam dunk. And then you get into that ecosystem where there are a lot of accomplished and popular women's sports teams. So I do think it's a slam dunk. They are going to be like rivals, and hatred will eventually run deep, but I don't think they can be too mad at each other now, because it feels like part of the reason why they got a PWHL team
for sure.
That you can form.
They definitely work together.
Yes, exactly.
They'll be emerald green and cream will be their official colors, and they'll just go by PWHL Seattle until they get a name. And it's funny, so it was announced today, and on this day in 2021, Seattle became the NHL's 32nd team.
Okay,
as well,
so. I was going to say, like, do you feel a little bad if you're Seattle a week after Vancouver? Like, you got to kind of...
I think they both deserve their own day.
That might have been part of
they
it.
They deserve their own day.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also some
history.
synergy with the NHL team.
It'll be interesting. You know, I will be very, very interested in how the expansion draft is going to work. They still have a little bit of time to figure it out, but not so much, because the playoffs will kick off really soon. And they'll have to figure out how many teams can protect each player. We talked about this with Vancouver, but they have that to figure out. And then also how the draft will work and how these two teams, expansion teams, will get to draft in an 8-team draft now moving forward. So I wouldn't say that I think expansion will pause now. I think two teams in one season is a lot. See how this plays out next year and see how adding two new franchises and having all that travel will work with the team before they're, you know, adding two teams every single season. I'd say I'm curious, optimistic, but like also cautiously.
Yeah, two teams every 2 years would be a lot. I think this will definitely like change the ecosystem pretty significantly. A lot of players are going to have to move. A lot of players are going to have to step up into roles. It's definitely going to change the league in a big way. So you got to make sure you can house the teams. You got to make sure you can populate the teams. And I don't really think that's an issue. But you got to let that conveyor belt of talent come through. And it's only been a couple collegiate seasons in the same way it's only been a couple PWHL seasons. So hopefully they don't rush to add too many, but it is exciting having more teams and involving more markets.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing the stories that go on with creating these names and these fan bases. But welcome to PWHL Seattle. Happy to have 8 teams in already season 2 coming up around the corner. All right, let's talk about the big
season
game.
Season 3.
Well, it will be, season 2. Like, this is season 2 now.
Mm.
Yeah. Season 2, we already have the idea of having 8 is what I meant. Sorry.
Okay.
We're confused. It is still season 2.
We'll
it is still wrapping up. And we'll see who's going to get the Walter Cup this year. Okay, let's take a look at Seattle and Winnipeg. As we mentioned, that's on Sportsnet. Second part of our doubleheader, Montreal and Washington getting started in about 25 minutes. Seattle-Winnipeg will be closer to 9:30-10. And let's bring in Sarah Orleski, Winnipeg Jets host and producer. He gets us set for tonight. Sarah, appreciate you coming on. I see you're wearing your Winnipeg whiteout. Ready to go.
Yeah, it was on earlier this morning because it's so cold in the arena that I tried to layer up, to be honest, as much as possible. But yes, I will be joining the throngs of people later on and wearing some white out there so I don't stick out.
It fits because it's a big, big game tonight in Winnipeg.
Absolutely.
Is it the biggest game since, well, what? You tell me.
It's a huge game. It's a swing game. And is this a must-win game? No, of course not, because it's only game 5 in the series and they're knotted up at 2 apiece. But this is certainly a significant game. Home ice has meant so much in this series, with both teams winning both of their games so far. And, you know, as the Jets said, it didn't go obviously the way that they wanted in St. Louis. They didn't like the way that they played if you were looking at the games as 60-minute holes. But this is why you fought for 82 games, to be able to win the President's Trophy and to be able to have home ice advantage. They have played very well at home throughout the regular season and so far in the playoffs. And now you're down to a best of 3, and 2 out of the 3 games are at Canada Life Center. So the Jets should feel confident going in that, you know, home ice, I think, in this series we've seen with the fans can certainly make a difference, and they'll try to ride that tonight.
Yeah, that home ice advantage. I've never been to a game in Winnipeg. I'm looking forward.
You have to come at some point.
I know.
Yes.
I really need to, and I need to experience what the whiteout is like, because, you know, not to compare fan bases, but we've talked a lot about Toronto and how the crowd seems very reactive to opportunities or lack of opportunities. And last night the Leafs lost on home ice, and there's like this tension in the building, right? And I think that's understood with the history for the Maple Leafs in the playoff. But when I watch Winnipeg, it feels like they push the team like positively, like there's just this loud energy and this momentum regardless of the score or regardless of the situation. Like, is that how it feels when you're in the building, where the whiteout, the Winnipeg crowd like almost pushes the team over the finish line at times?
Oh, I think absolutely. It is so loud. Everyone knows that it's the smallest building in the NHL and the way that it's constructed. But fans, the whiteout is what people look forward to all season long to be able to take part in. But I'd be lying if I said that there certainly wasn't a nervous energy, I think, when it comes to this crowd, because while it hasn't been as longstanding as the Leafs and they don't have necessarily the same sort of playoff history and pain, they certainly look. This is a group that, a fan base that in a short period of time has dealt with some blows. When you look at, this is a Jets team that the COVID years and aside hasn't made it beyond the first round and since 2018. And they've had the early exit to St. Louis in 2019. We've seen it to Vegas. Obviously, everyone's talked extensively about what goes on in Colorado. So you want to, you know, I think there is a little bit of nervous energy with it, but I think that people also are like, hey, there is home ice. We have seen the difference they can make. Get behind this team is the sense that you're getting from fans, certainly when looking at the comments on social media and online, of let's be that, you know, sixth skater or seventh person that can make the difference.
So just going through the series, Sarah, in the first 2 games, Winnipeg wins both. They do, you know, they get both wins, but St. Louis, I thought, made it difficult in those two victories. Then they go to St. Louis, and it's a little bit more convincing from the St. Louis side. They're able to use their home ice advantage, and they can win those games a little bit more comfortably than Winnipeg did. How, you know, How have St. Louis made things difficult on the Winnipeg Jets this season? The Winnipeg Jets had this great year where, sure, they met some adversity at times, but they were, like, very consistently just doing the things that make them successful and getting it over the line. St. Louis has thrown a bit of a curveball, it seems, at them that they're trying to manage. What is that curveball? What have they done that teams in the regular season failed to?
Well, I think first, if you look at the job that St. Louis did just down the stretch, there's basically the talk about the way that they've played post Four Nations. And you think going into that trade deadline, you didn't know if a number of key players were going to be traded from St. Louis, but nope, they kept them together and they had the best record from Four Nations on. They have had the best home record. I think it's 14 in a row now when you go back to the regular season that they have won on home ice. And so they have, there is a belief within that team as well. But I think that they've also, as this series has gone on, we've seen adjustments that Jim Montgomery has made, that the players have been able to execute as well. We've seen more offense come from their blue line. That's been a huge thing, the point shots that have been able to get through. And there's a lot of traffic in front of Connor Hellebuck. And obviously the narrative exists about Connor needing to step up his game in the postseason. But also, I think that you look at a lot of the shots had, I think that there's been, that St. Louis has done a really good job of creating havoc in front of him, of taking away his eyes, of getting traffic in front of him. They've been able to be opportunistic as well. Look, bounces have gone their way, whether it's been off of the behind of Neil Pionk, or, you know, even the first game here in Winnipeg, when you look at some of the ways that they were able to kick the puck up and bat it out of the air, like, they just, they've had bounces be able to go their way so far. But I think that one of the big things we've seen is the fact that their blue line has become much more involved in the traffic in front of the net when it comes to Connor Hellebuck. It isn't something they said. Justin Falk said earlier in the series, it's a simple recipe. They're not reinventing the wheel here. But playoff hockey, so many of the goals come from right in front or creating that havoc around there. And that's what they've done a good job of. The Jets played well in game four to start for it. They had that stretch in the second period where everything kind of went off that off the rails, and St. Louis was able to be opportunistic and was able to capitalize on it. The Jets have not put together 60-minute for it yet. I think that as much as what we've seen from St. Louis and the adjustments that they've made, and they've done a good job with it, they've been able to execute. I think that conversely, we haven't seen the Jets on their end execute the way that you would expect to. Scott O'Neill said it. Look, they're in games one and two, he felt that their best players were better than St. Louis's. Their goalie was better. Games three and four, it was reversed. Right now in the best of three, it comes down to who is going to be, when you compare the lines, when you compare the goaltenders' positions, whose team is going to come out on top? Whose top players are going to be better? Whose grinders are going to be better? Whose goalie is going to be better?
Okay, let's stick on that goalie conversation, because, I mean, we're seeing a lot of conversation about Connor Hellebuck and how much of this is on his shoulders, or how much of this he's going to use to maybe propel him throughout the series. I just want to know from you what his mentality is going into a game like this tonight, where he's grown throughout the seasons, where he's used his experience as a winner of the Vezina Trophy, as a guy that has been put in huge situations and been successful in times where he hasn't. Like, how does he prepare for a game that feels like maybe one of the biggest games in Winnipeg Jets history that we can remember?
Absolutely. I think that he came out on Monday when they announced the Vezina finalists, and obviously not the most ideal timing considering how things went on in games three and four, but he came out and he acknowledged that he needs to be better. And it's, I don't put this all on Connor Hellebuck. As I said, you can't stop what you can't see. And I think that at times he's been at a disadvantage, but you're also the top goaltender in the league, you can argue, in the world. And so you have to find a way at times to make saves. But I think there's one thing with Connor Hellebuck is that he has never lacked confidence. He came out on Monday. I thought it was great for him to take some of the responsibility and show that accountability of saying that, yes, he does need to be better. He is going to be better. I think that he is, he's so motivated, and I don't think that this will impact his confidence. I think that this is an opportunity for him to come out and show people this is why he, you know, I think for many people will be a finalist for the Hart. And this is why he is considered to be one of the best. But you can't just do it in the regular season. You have to show it in the playoffs. And this is a great stage and a great opportunity for him too.
It is a legacy start in some ways. It's not like you can't tarnish your legacy if you're a three-time Vezina Trophy winner, you get a Hart Trophy, like all that stuff will exist. But this is a massive, massive start for Connor Hellebuyck. I don't think there's any way of getting around that. Of course, there is a bit of a safety net because they will still have a couple games potentially, but a lot of pressure on Hellebuyck tonight. We'll see how he responds. Jordan Binnington on the other side, it's interesting because it's like the Four Nations redux in a lot of ways. And Binnington gets the better of Hellebuyck, I suppose, in that matchup, despite it not really being about the goaltenders, it felt like, at the Four Nations. And maybe it's not as much about the goaltenders in this series as it's made out to be, but Binnington seems to thrive in this specific situation where he's staring down the best goaltender in the world in Connor Hellebuyck. It hasn't been like a loud series from Binnington, but how do you just assess the Binnington factor, his place in the series, how he's performed, and why he loves to be in this position?
Yeah, well, I think when he's been called upon, by and large, he has made the saves. He's stepped up and made the ones that he's had to. I don't think that the Jets have made it tough enough on him. As much as we talk about the things that St. Louis has been trying to do to Hellebuyck, I think that the Jets, be wise and will emphasize trying to do more of that themselves, but to Binnington. But look, he's a big-time goaltender. You look at the run that he has been on. I think that the confidence that Four Nations seem to give him, and I'm not going to pretend that I watched him all season despite being in the Central Division, but I mean, we obviously saw him in matchups against Winnipeg throughout the regular season, and we're keeping an eye on the team. But even when you look at the hype video that the St. Louis Blues put out when they start for their game production at the start of the games, it begins with Binnington and Colton Parayko, but Binnington putting on that Team Canada jersey and how that's really changed their season from that point on, from that break. And I just think that there is a confidence about him. There is a swagger about him that the team feeds off of as well. And that's something that Jim Montgomery has spoken about. And I think you see it with him, that when he seems to be in the zone, that the team continues to believe and buy into it as well. And certainly you can't argue with what he's been able to do so far when called upon. So he's got them back in this series. He's been there when he needs to be. We'll see whether or not he can do it in game 5, 6, and you never know, potentially 7.
We're chatting with Sarah Orleski, Winnipeg Jets host and producer, ahead of big one tonight. And it looks like Gabe Vilardi will be returning. Now, just what does that presence mean for this team offensively, and how much are you looking forward to seeing what kind of impact he'll have, especially on home ice?
Well, especially on the power play, to be honest. As much as interested in 5-on-5, great, because he slots back in on the top line beside Kyle Connor and Mark Scheifele. And so it just kind of puts all of your lines back to what we had seen throughout the regular season, that it had success. Still no Nikolaj Ehlers for the Jets. That continues to be a big loss, but it at least slots people back into more regular roles for them, let's say. But the impact I think that people are looking to see from Gabe Vilardi is, what can it do for Winnipeg's power play? Mm-hmm. Winnipeg's power play without him has struggled. They have 2 power play goals in this series. That's it so far. And you could argue the last, you know, there's 2, one from Mark Scheifele, which kind of got a good bounce off of it. And then Neil Pionk's in when the game is already out of hand. So it hasn't been the factor that one would anticipate it to be, especially when you think about how this was a power play that overall through 82 games finished as the top power play in the league and leading the way for them. Gabe Vilardi. He is their most important piece on the power play. We've seen the impact of him not being out there. He's not, he will tell you himself, he's not the fastest skater, but he has great hands. He's in those tight areas right in front of Jordan Binnington. That's where he can do his damage. And so looking to see not only the impact on, as I mentioned, a 5-on-5, but in particular, if given the opportunity, what can he help that first power play unit with? Are they able to get some production? Because that has been something that's been sorely missing so far in this series.
Yeah, big time. Sarah, we appreciate you coming on before a big game day. Hopefully we get to chat a lot more if the Winnipeg Jets make it through this first round. So fingers crossed on that one, and more Canadian teams making a playoff push. So we appreciate your time tonight.
Hey, appreciate you having me on. And hopefully at some point you two are going to get out here.
I would love it.
It would be great. It would be great. I'm just saying, maybe the powers that be,
there
it's a Sportsnet series, you could come out, do something on location.
Perfect.
Just a suggestion.
All right. We'll take it up with the higher ups. Appreciate your time, Sarah. Enjoy tonight's game.
Thanks so much, you too.
Thanks so much. Sarah Lesky, that's Winnipeg Jets host and producer ahead of St. Louis Winnipeg. A series tied up to a piece, a 9:30 start on Sportsnet.
More reason to want them to go on a run.
I'd love to get out to the Peg.
Yeah, I would too. I've never been to Winnipeg. You never been to Winnipeg?
I have, but not to Winnipeg Jets game.
Jets game, okay.
I went and played hockey there.
You get the dub or what?
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, so the Blue Jays continue a series with the Red Sox tonight. They're like limping, staggering, flailing. I don't know what you want to call it, but the Blue Jays are looking to put an end to another losing streak tonight, three in a row now after Bowden Francis was absolutely crushed by Boston last night. It'll be Yariel Rodriguez in the Max Scherzer spot in the rotation. Lucas Giolito gets the ball for the Red Sox, his debut with Boston. He has not thrown a pitch in the major league since October 2023, so a bit of an unknown here, despite there being some tape, clearly, on Giolito for the Blue Jays tonight, but a bit of an unknown. What is he going to look like after a year and a half on the shelf?
He'll be sloppy.
He could be. He also could be
dialed.
He could be unhittable.
I'm going to go with
like many pitchers have been against the Red Sox or against the Blue Jays this year.
I'm going to go with my best bet: Red Sox, Blue Jays over 9.5 runs. If you just look at the last, I don't know, 10 games that the Jays have played, a lot of them have been over that and without their own offensive contributions. Last night, 10-2, 5-1, 11-2. Like they're getting hit around here a little bit.
Yeah, they're getting beat up.
But this is safe because any team can be just helping contribute to the over, whether it's Giolito or it's Rodriguez. Maybe there's just a lot of balls in play tonight. So over 9.5 for me will be my best bet.
I'm desperately searching for something that doesn't need to be graded tonight because I've been struggling.
You keep saying that, Justin.
And I haven't won a pick since. That's why I keep saying it.
So you need to change your attitude and say, you're absolutely dialed.
No, I'm going to do what I do best, and that is look forward to the future. And today I will do it in Major League Baseball. I love the Detroit Tigers. The American League is full of mediocrity. There is not a great team, but there is a great pitcher in Tarik Skubal, and there's a pretty darn good team in the Detroit Tigers who plays behind him. If we are looking to the future, which, again, I love to do, I think the Tigers are most likely to get through the American League East, leaning on the best pitcher in baseball in Skubal and a team that is really talented and growing and probably will have a reason to add ahead of the deadline in a weak Central Division and with the opportunity to go on a real run. I do not think they will win the World Series, though. As we know, the balance of power is in the National League. So a couple exact matchups to sweat as you cheer on the Tigers all summer long. Dodgers over the Tigers, not my favorite, 25-1, but I think you got to have a little Dodgers just to make sure.
Okay.
But two I really like: the New York Mets to beat the Tigers in the World Series is 70-1. The Chicago Cubs to beat the Tigers in the World Series, 140-1. This is just a bet on the Tigers basically to win the pennant, and then we'll see where we're at that point.
Do you want to tell people about your fantasy baseball mishap?
I don't know if it's a mishap. I sold a
It's a mishap.
I didn't even sell it. I gave away a fantasy.
That's not what I'm talking about. What you've been doing for the last 3 weeks.
Well, I'll give you the story.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that I had Shohei Ohtani on my bench for the last couple weeks. It's fantasy baseball.
And he had first overall pick.
I know it's
first
daily.
First overall pick. Pick Shohei Ohtani, benches him for 3 weeks.
I know it's a daily thing, but like, you know, you just keep the same lineup in. If I miss like a couple extra at bats with a bench player, like I'm a busy guy right now. Okay. So seeing that, quite embarrassed. I'm not trying to sell off my team. I wanted to give my team away to someone who's going to have more proper care on it. That would be our guy, Andrew Holland, who's pushing the buttons for us in the back. So Holly is now taking over my team. That team is buoyed by Shohei Ohtani, who's not going to be
might
on the
be
bench
good to be in your lineup
any longer because he is going to rise. He's going to have this team rise from the ashes. Ninth now?
You are in ninth out of 10 teams.
I'll check back in a couple months.
We play each other next week, which is why I'm rattled, because it's not fair that you're now going to try.
You don't want to beat up on someone
other.
Who's not actually
paying attention.
Yeah, I
would love the win. Thank you.
So we'll see when the Tigers are in like the perfect position. These prices are so much shorter in like September, where Andrew Holland has brought my team from ninth to what position? First? I wouldn't put it past him.
Okay. Best of
Shohei Ohtani and Andrew Holland is a great combination.
I can't wait to see your rise from ninth to third. I'll see you in the playoffs.
All you right? won't see me.
I'll see Holly.
My hands,
I think it's shady. You know what? I feel bullied here by my co-host and technical producer.
Don't like it, pitch better.
Well, everyone have a great night. We'll be back tomorrow. See you then.